Hello, I'm Carrie Gard, and welcome to Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders. Welcome back to the show. If you listened to my episode last week with Dave Corlett, you may have noticed that I did a little FYI for y'all where we got about five episodes left here before we kick it over to our live shows exclusively. So we go live now on LinkedIn on a regular basis, and then those shows will get wrapped into audio files across our normal standard of Spotify, Apple, Pocket, so on and so forth. We are also going to be on YouTube coming soon. So very excited for that. So just a little things are going to be a little different around here at tea time, and I wanted to give you a little heads up. The beauty of being live is that y'all get to join in. So if you can make it while we're recording, then you get to ask questions and get them answered in real time. Super cool. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to create like a regular cadence where like every Friday at the exact same time I'm going to do a live recording. So it's really whenever my guest is available, and it's a little sporadic, but hopefully that's part of the journey and the fun. And if you don't make it, no worries. You can always listen in as usual. And if you want to pop over to the recording, you can ask questions and we'll get them answered asynchronously. But yeah, it's really exciting to switch it up and to move with the market and to expand our footprint. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We've done about three live shows, and we got more coming. So stay tuned on that. In this episode, I talked to, oh my gosh, she was so wonderful. It was a while ago. So thank you. Thank you, Rivetal, for hanging in there with me. So Revital Libfrand joined me a few, it had to been a few months ago. I got connected with her through her colleague, Alon. We just got chatting over LinkedIn, and I invited him on the podcast. He was like, actually, you know what? You really need to speak to Revital. She's gonna be the best for this. And oh, was she ever. So thank you so much for Alon for the connection and for introducing me. I am so grateful for this conversation. In this conversation, Revital and I unpack what it means to bring stories to life for your brand in a way that is not for your brand. It's not about your brand. It's about the impact you're trying to make on your community and your customers in the long run. And she tells these amazing, beautiful stories and gives these examples that are just, yes, like this is what brand is all about. And it's so good. We talk about the balance between brand and lead gen and demand gen and lead capture and how she's approaching that in using these stories. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous conversation. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. A little bit about Rivetal, so you know who you're hanging out with on this episode. So Rivetal is a business executive with strong marketing, product sales, and operations orientation. With over 20 plus years of experience in marketing, business development, sales, and management, she leverages her experience, her business understanding to help software businesses grow. She's currently at a cybersecurity company. That's how we got connected. You can contact her if you're looking for a person with perfect combination of strategy, hands-on capability, and can-do attitude. Her email is in the show notes. What an amazing conversation. I can't wait for you to take a listen. So let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Rivetal Libfrand. Rivetal. Thank you for joining me on Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders.
Hello, Carrie, and thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you. And I can't wait to have this conversation. It's one I haven't really dug into with people. So I'm very excited to bring your point of view to our listeners. Before we get there, tell us your story. What do you do and how did you get there?
Well, I joined Audix, a cybersecurity company, about 4 years ago as the head of product marketing. I think I was actually the first person that held kind of marketing slash product position in the company at that time. So I had the opportunity and the challenge to build the marketing from ground up. Audix is actually the first cybersecurity for me, but I've been in the tech scene for, I don't know, more than 25 years. I served in several positions in leading sales, business development, and then in the later stage, I shifted more to product marketing and manage analytics teams. I work with companies in different sectors like telecommunication, mobile apps, BI, and I think I experienced all kinds of products from traditional on-prem to, of course, cloud-based solution and pure SaaS. In my background, I have a BA in economics, and I completed my MBA in business administration with a major in marketing. And I don't know, how do I get my first job in sales was actually a coincidence, but I believe that since then I kind of understand that I know how to tell a story. I know how to position a product in the way that a customer or partner that I engage with will understand that this is exactly what they need to comply with their challenge or need. So I would say that I don't know, pitching, positioning, and telling a story was always there for me. But I believe that I got improved during the years and make it as a passion for me. So that's me.
That is, I have a couple follow-up questions. One
Sure.
is, the first one is, how was the shift into cyber? Audix was your first cybersecurity company. You came from a very eclectic background in tech, but was science and cyber feel different, or did it just feel like another industry that you could figure out very quickly? Or was it totally different and a completely new learning world?
It's I think it's a mixture because there are definitely things that I never thought about them, even if I'm in the tech industry for quite a while. I think I knew the buzzword of antivirus and firewall without really understanding what exactly they do. Well, I mean, maybe the antivirus, yes, but I didn't really understand how it works and so on. And I think this is something that for me as a person was very interesting, not as a marketing leader, but as a person to understand that really cybersecurity and cyber education touches everyone. And just, I think it was earlier this week, North Dakota declared that they're going to enforce cyber education starting from, I don't remember if it's from kindergarten, but definitely from in all grades at school. They became it's part of their law. I mean, they enforce schools to have such education. And I think it's so important, really. I mean, I'm sure that many other countries and states will follow them because, in the same way that you teach a kid how to be careful in the road, you need to teach him how to be safe in this virtual world. It touches everyone.
It does. It does. Even with my kids, they have laptops now, and we're trying to figure out they're so mature for their age. And so the age limiting that is and the content that they're restricted to for their age cap is almost too young for them. And so we pushed the age limit up, but we did it with this educational piece of let's talk about what we're doing here and how this can affect you, what you need to be careful of, and what you need to look for. And every decision we make seems to have this caveat of the impact that the internet can make on them, especially when we start losing a bit of that control of what they can see all the time. It's scary.
It is. Well, I remember as a kid, my parents Used to tell me, don't talk to stranger, of course, don't go with them to places, but they raise the risk that we have as kids in the world. And we need to do the same also in the virtual world.
That's true.
And hacking and cybersecurity is definitely part of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm interested to see how North Dakota, their law unfolds and how they're going to integrate it, because it's got to be putting a lot. It's a lot on teachers now, right? So it's going to be interesting to see. Teachers already have so much to do, and now they're going to layer in this. It's going to be interesting to see how they approach it.
Absolutely.
My last question for you, in terms of your story, and you said you sort of. It sounds like you were very deliberate in going to school for marketing, but then your first job was sort of a happenstance. How did you know that you wanted to go into marketing?
You know, when I was working, for many years for sales and business development. So at that time in B2B, marketing was kind of the assisting force for the sales, where sales were the kings. And I think that I think it is shifting now for B2B businesses. So the part of the marketing is way more impactful, and there is more because the B2B market is kind of shifting from the relationship sort of sales process to like more product driven sales process, and this is really impact the role of the marketing. And I think as part of the evolution of myself as a person and the sales processes and the product that are shifting to the product. So I guess it was for me like a natural thing to do. Because in any case, when you're working in sales, and I'm talking about enterprise sales that are, although I started with deals that the average deal revenue was, I don't know, a few thousands of dollars, but it shifted to a few thousands of dollars. And at the end of my career, it was millions of dollars or millions of euros. So you kind of have an evolution yourself, and you know how to position stuff. And you know that even if you got a deck from your marketing manager, in reality, you need to kind of articulate the message in a more accurate way, because you know that the specific customer that you're planning to meet wants to hear something a little bit different from you. So you need to make those adjustments. So it was, I didn't really think about it, but it just happened and it was shifted. So, but I love this direction.
Yeah, it seems to be like when I walked into marketing, I didn't really understand what all the possibilities and jobs could be in marketing. I started as a media planner, and my very first interview, the person I was sitting across from asked me, "Do you know what media planning is?" And I was like, "Tell me, what is it? 'Cause I have no idea." I mean, it for so many of us, it's not something we necessarily go after. Or even if we do, in your case, where you sort of went to school for marketing, you're never really sure what your journey is going to be. And so, thank you for sharing your story.
Well, actually, the MBA, I did it for myself as a gift when I for my 40 years old birthday. It was a gift for myself, the MBA.
What a gift. I mean, that's another, I mean, that's like, I mean, I'm a forever learner too. So for me, that seems like a wonderful gift. But for some of our folks who might be like, wait, you went back to school for fun?
Yes. It was, actually it was, because you know when you study for your BA, you're kind of young, and it's like you do it because you have to do it. But in the MBA, it's different. You do it because you want to do it, which is a completely different learning experience.
Do you feel like because you were in the mindset of not feeling like you had to do it, but because you wanted to do it, you? One of two, both of these are possibly all of these things. either you picked it up a bit faster because you've been in the market, and or you figured out what, like, did you take it all in and you just absorbed it and enjoyed it? Or did you say, oh, this is really applicable, I get to apply this like right now? How was sort of that journey for you, and like that, the have to versus the I get to?
No, they have to. I mean that, you know, when you're young, you kind of do stuff not necessarily because you thought about it too much, but, you know, you have to study BA because that's what your parents told you to do so, or that's what you were educated for and so on. But in the MBA, it was different because, first of all, I felt... I felt a need to do something for myself, and it's not that I really needed it for the career, because you know, my career was fine. I was working in diverse positions and so on. It's not something that I needed in order to progress myself or to improve myself at work, in terms of getting another job or something like that. It was really for me, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was fun. And, you know, to be a student and when you're almost 40, it's fun.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I love that. Thank you so much, Michelle, for sharing. In terms of right now and at ODEX and your team, what you got going on, what's a challenge that you're all, that either you personally are facing in your role or you as a team are facing? What's keeping you up at night? What's hard?
In one word, budget. yeah, I think that this is really the most challenging thing for us, because our team is very, very small. There are two people in my team, and in addition, from time to time we get help also from freelance and outsourced, but for specific tasks that we do. But the budget is a big issue. When you work with a small company that the budget is very, very limited, it's a challenge. Period. You need to be very creative in order not to spend or invest money almost at all, but try to figure out how to do creative stuff. And also, when you work in an ecosystem, for example, like with Microsoft or stuff like that, then these companies, sometimes they have some budgets for marketing campaigns and stuff like that, and you need to know how to utilize them with partners. So this is also a channel that I'm trying to very much use in order to increase the capabilities that will allow us to do some more marketing activities. So this is also an area. But to summarize it, money.
Yes, especially in today's climate, I feel like everybody's being asked to do more with either the same or less. I think this is going to lend really nicely into our conversation. But before I get there, given the size of your team and the budget constraints, partners, it sounds like something you're certainly focusing on. Where else? I know that there's a ton of startups out there, a ton of companies, and especially now that all these layoffs, one of the silver linings and layoffs is that people go and start their own companies. And so there's going to be a huge boom for tech startups again, which is going to be really fun to watch. But in those early stages, when you are under those constraints, where do you, in your experience, where have you focused to say, okay, here are the constraints we have with our budget, here's how we have to use our money wisely. Where else other than partner have you said, let's start here?
I mentioned the partners, but it's something that needs to be well defined with the company strategy, meaning with the CEO of the company, in order to prioritize the task that needs to be done. Because if the task is to bring short-term revenue, then you very much need to focus on leads. Well, you need to bring leads anyway along the way, but it's really a matter of where do you invest more energy and resources. The other path, if the company is in the process of raising money, then you need to be a little bit more on the PR side. And this is very hard to do it with no budget, but it is something that that can be done in a way. If you engage, for example, with thought leader and do some like out of the box campaigns with them, it is possible to create a little bit of buzz without really investing the needed resources in PR. So I think it's really about prioritizing the goals, and that's where I will put, the focus and the money.
Yes, I think it's such always an important part to come back to what the goal is, because the goal will define the strategy for sure. And these are great examples that I know most startups are in. Either they need revenue or they need funding. Good thing we all need money to keep our companies going and to help facilitate our missions. So yes to that. Let's talk about this budget challenge definitely lends into an interesting conversation we had in our prep call around brand awareness. This feels very counterintuitive that you would have limited budget, but you'd be focused on brand. And maybe not to your point, like, if trying to find funding is the mission and more PR focused energy needs to happen, then maybe brand does make sense. But for you and for Odex, and given your challenges, why is brand something you feel is important to do right now?
Brand is important, I think, all the time, and especially when you work in a competitive environment with so many cybersecurity companies, and normally there are areas that there is like a one or two that are dominant in the field, and the rest are very, very small. So you need to make your name and brand be seen, actually, in a way. And we were trying to do several stuff in order to make our brand seen. So at least, and one thing that I can say, and I'm proud of it, that in our on-prem solutions, when I joined the company, there was almost zero awareness for the Odex brand. But now in the on-prem solutions that we have, I think that there is no tender or RFP that that Odex is not compared to one of the top competitor in the field, which is a company which is, 20 times bigger than us and has way more revenues, and they just raised like over $100 million and so on. So these are the giants that we need to face with, and we're trying to do it in a creative manner. I'll give you a few examples. We decided to be proactive in the Cyber Awareness Month, and the Israeli Cyber Authority requested companies that want to contribute content, and that's where we came with the Lady Hacker Diary. Originally, it was written in Hebrew, but then we translated it into English. It was like it looks like a comics book. Each chapter basically describe the challenges that a lousy hacker is trying to plan then her next hacking, and then what went wrong. And in the part of what went wrong, it was basically the explanation what you need to do in order to protect yourself against phishing, against social engineering, and all kinds of cyber attacks or cyber vectors. And it was very nice fun piece because it looks like comics, and it was great. And this is something that, from our perspective, required, of course, some work of copywriting from mm-hmm. our end, but we did it. And thanks to our graphic designer, and it was really, really nice. And we still have it in our website.
We'll link to
another
it.
Example is you always try to leverage special holidays or stuff like that in order to do something a little bit different. So at the end of 2022, we decided that for 2023 we will engage with 23 security leaders and get, or IT leaders, and get from them tips for how to secure their company. We ran this campaign in the social during December, January. Each one of them got like a banner. It was very colorful with the tips. And at the end, we wrapped everything together into a GIF. And it was also summarized as a blog in our website. And so we kind of took these tips and created a lot of content around it. And I can tell you that due to the fact that we engaged with these people, of course, they are sharing because they are proud that they are part of something. And the impressions that we got and the exposure to our brand was much higher than just a regular post that you normally do. Another example was for the International Women's Day. We decided this year that we would like to kind of salute to the women in Ukraine who suffered in the last year and still suffering, unfortunately, from the war. So we engaged with several women that are working and, you know, had to continue their career. And with the slogan, "Yes, I have something to say." And also, this is something that got a lot of exposure. And actually, the video just made me cry. It was very, very emotional. And these are the things that I'm not trying to sell Audix, but I'm trying to bring people to look at interesting content and then see that it was like powered by Audix or done by Audix. So at least they are becoming familiar with the brand. And next time when they will see something that will be more like on the professional level or more on the product level, it might be easier to communicate with us. So These are kind of examples.
They're amazing examples. The top two are really interesting in the sense that while they're brand awareness, they're very, they're still very industry, like they still feel very targeted. It doesn't feel very blanket. It's very targeted around who would be interested in this content, who would watch it, which ultimately would be your primary audience. Of course, it'll go outside of that too. But at the end of the day, it's about who you want to be working with. So I think there's a lovely tie there. The third one is less about that. And I think by design, it was very unself-fulfilling. A question I have about all of these, especially with your limited budget, is the first one makes sense. You have copywriters and you have a copywriter potentially and a graphic designer potentially. Maybe you freelance this, maybe you have this in-house, but definitely not a big team like you mentioned. So on very small resources, this seems very possible. The question I have around it is, how did you get the Lady Hacker Diary out into the world? Was it just some social posts? Did you put any paid behind it? What was sort of the strategy of, you know, this idea of if you build it, they will come, I think is long gone. So how did you get it out into the world to say that you have this thing and to those who might find it useful?
Well, first of all, it was co-branded. I mean, the Hebrew version was co-branded with the Israeli Cyber Authority. So they published it at first. Nice. Okay. And it was more targeted for consumers, not at all B2B. Okay. So you as an individual that doesn't understand anything in cybersecurity, I mean, you heard about something in the news, you know what, you know that there are hackers, but you don't really understand their practice. And I'll give you just a simple example of understanding that you need to see the exact address of a sender when you get an email from an unknown person, or even if you get something which is a bit suspicious from, I don't know, Microsoft support asking to click on this in order to reset your password or something like that. And this is something that we need to bring the awareness, to increase the awareness, to understand that it was actually a fake address, and Microsoft is not coming from the real Microsoft, but Microsoft something with a different, I don't know, suffix or something like that. So the first campaign was distributed by the Israeli Cyber Authority. It was part of the Cyber Awareness Month. So we just found the opportunity to bring them the right content, and they liked it, so they published it. Okay, so it's a channel that, as I said, we're trying to find channels that that we can do stuff without paying out of the pocket money, and this was one of the opportunities. Later on, what we did was translate it into English, and then we published it in social and not as paid content but just organic. And in addition, we offered to any partner that would like to co-brand it with us, we just simply add their logo and provide it to them so they can distribute it to their customers as something which is fun. So this is also something that you can do very, very easily. Just take the content, you have your logo, put your partner logo, and here you go. You gave them a gift to distribute to their customers, and that's the way we did it.
That's so smart. I love how you are really leading into community too, right? So to work with the Cyber Authority and to say, here's something we're gifting to you and also to your users in this educational piece, that's also really fun, especially when you're talking about consumers. So how creative of you too to give back to your community in a way to get that visibility and to show that you're more than just a product. Like, just so cool. So cool. And it sounds like you did something similar for the 23 security leaders, right? Like, you partnered with these individuals who have, I imagine, some clout and following within their networks to say, let's put a piece of content together for you. Now, this is a bit, both of these, this one and the next one for International Women's Day, sounds a little bit more resource intensive because you're talking about video. So talk me through how you approached being able to do video for both of these, given the resources you have available.
The 23 trips for Safe 2023 was not in a video.
Okay.
We approached these leaders mainly via LinkedIn, and asked them if they agree to take part of it. And we said, what we need from you is your photo and like a tip. And we told them, if you want, we can even suggest a few tips, and so just for you to see. That's what we did. And of course, you need to approach more than 23 in order to get the 23. People like it when you ask them such a thing, because they don't need to invest much, okay, in that. And then our graphic designer just put the tip in a nice banner that was in many colors. We did it very, very colorful. So each banner had its own dominant color with the photo and the quote. So it required from us resources in terms of the graphic design, but we took a template. So we I always tell the team, let's go for a template. It makes it much more easier to, you know, to adjust. And you just need to change the color. So, and it looks brand new. And that's the way it works. So this was less time consuming in that sense. With the video for the International Women Day, we have Alon in my team. And he actually studied cinema studies in New York.
Wow.
So he loves videos. He loves filming. Yes. And it was really his project. We took shot of 6 or 8 women. I don't remember at the moment. And yeah, it took like a couple of days to edit everything and make it a nice video. But I think I'm lucky that I have these skills in-house with Alon that loves to do videos. And that's the reason we are able to do everything in-house. So the team includes graphic designer, this is something that I think is very, very helpful. I used to work with outsourced graphic designer, but it's kind of hard, especially if you want to generate content and marketing collateral and many, many stuff in an ongoing manner. When you work with outsourcing, either you agree with them that they will be they will dedicate, I don't know, a day or two in a week just for you, so you will be able to plan it properly if you don't need somebody that is in full time. So this is something that for me is very, very important to have this capability kind of in-house. And Alon that has also multiple capabilities, including video and copywriting. A lot of them, I mean, in terms of product marketing, most of the brochures and product sheets and stuff like that, I wrote them myself. Some of the blog, Alon is doing part. So
it sounds like you're all very hands-on, which is very cool.
Yes, we are.
And
when you work in a startup, you must be very hands-on.
Yes, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I love where you're putting your energy. It sounds very visual. Visual seems very important to you. Is that mm-hmm. because you know that to work? Is that because you feel like that's where the industry's gone? Or is that just something that you really gravitate towards yourself in terms of wanting things to be very visual versus text-heavy?
First of all, you're right. The digital is important, and the visuals are very, very important. It's very catchy, and it gets the attention of the readers that that are overwhelmed with a lot of content. And I always tell the team that when you write a blog, the most important thing is the title and the subtitle. The rest is I mean, it's important, but that's as important as the titles and the subtitles. That's where the focus is. So
the images on your website, I'm just perusing now because I can't help myself. Everybody should head over to the Odix website, by the way, in terms of just being a great example of everything that Rivetal is talking about. It is very visual, and I think find it very difficult in the digital age when you're selling something that's very technical and behind the scenes. It's very tough to bring that to life without images that are stock, right? Of people sitting around computers and pointing at things. And you've managed to do it. So is that because you're a graphic designer? Like, where does the inspiration come into with the graphics on your website? And how have you been able to, is this all thanks to your graphic designer? Is this collaboration? Did you bring outside help in? Like, this is a very graphic driven visual website you have, and a lot of it.
I think it's a lot of teamwork. And whenever we plan every Sunday, because we work on Sundays here in Israel, Then we have a meeting of the team and we discuss about the visual stuff that we want to have. We kind of a team that that has a lot of ideas. And that's where we how we grasp the you know the ideas into a visual thing that the graphic designer know how to place it. Of course, it sometimes there are things that goes with a lot of back and forwards, but I really really like the results that we have. What I wanted to add is that digital is very important. I think that talking about the sales processes for B2B, obviously, I think that people are getting back into conferences and, you know, I think 3 years of COVID and the social distance was enough for most of the people and conferences are back. Definitely, if I would have more budget, we would invest more in that because I think it is important and it... the personal engagement is important for the business, but with digital, you can do a lot of virtual noise. So, in less budgets. So,
and I would say what you're doing is not noise at all. It feels very intentional, which is I think is what's so beautiful about it. I do want to ask in terms of when we had our conversation in the prep call, one of the things that we mentioned that we came up with is. You need to do both, right? Like we've been very heavy in the brand conversation. That doesn't mean, to my understanding, you're not doing lead generation. How do you balance the two given, how are you balancing the two? Brand always feels like something you should do later when you have more budget, you can go bigger. And right now start with leads and generate the, you know, be very transactional, a bit more transactional in that earlier stage. You've taken a different approach. And I'm just wondering how you're able to balance both being such an early stage startup.
Simply, when you plan the task of the people and the team, then you need to allocate the time for managing or creating the lead gen. In lead generation, then I invested, for example, more on search. Campaigns in Google. This is something that I did put budget that I am investing monthly budget for it. Not huge, but it's it is mandatory to put some money in search campaigns. And for example, in display campaigns, I in the last months I'm not investing money there because of budget limitations. And this is something that for display campaigns, it's more for brand awareness and not. For leads. So if you want to focus on leads, then you need to put some more money in search campaigns. And this is what I do. And in terms of balance, so I guess that understand that you need to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and that's what creates the balance. And as long as it's part of the weekly task that that you need to do, that's what we do.
It sounds like you've created some systems and processes in terms of, because you mentioned tasks. So I imagine in terms of your resources, what I love what you're saying is, you know, a lot of times when we talk about resources, we talk about time and money, right? And most people put a lot of emphasis on the money side of where their money goes. And you mentioned that a little bit in terms of paid search, but what were you really talking and what's interesting to me is the time piece that you're managing your team's time as a resource in a way that allows you to make this balance sort of happen of yes, so what's the split? Is it 50-50? Is it more time in lead gen? And then you get to do some of these fun projects when they come up. Is it, you know, how do you sort of manage that time every week? What's sort of the split you?
I think it depends on the week.
It's totally fair.
Yeah, it depends on the week. There are weeks that we will focus more on lead gen, especially if we want to target a certain industry, for example. Like, I think it was like 2 years ago, there was a period, there were a few months in the US with tons of hacking on municipalities. ransomware attacks. Like in 2 months, I don't remember how many, but there were a lot of cases of municipalities. So at that time, we said, okay, that's what we are focusing in the next month, to create campaigns around municipalities. And it, of course, it included the purpose of this campaign was definitely lead generation for the sales in the US to convert to, you know, to actual revenues. And it was pretty successful. We gained several customers from municipality. One of them was hacked, of course. And at that time, actually at that time, we had the team was bigger in Odix for the marketing, because I had another person who was dedicated just for content and PR. So we created a lot of content in external media, not just in our website, but also with some local portals that are dedicating their content to the municipality and governmental places. So we invested also in that, and it was pretty good in terms of lead generation. So it really depends on the week, would say.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I love how you're so in tune to the news. You talked about North Dakota. You talked about those municipalities. It sounds like you're very connected to what's going on in the world, and then how you can intentionally and thoughtfully, even with the each month, you know, International Women's Day to the Cyber mm-hmm. Awareness Month. I love how connected you are through that. Where do you get your news? How do you stay? Because you're not in the U.S., so how do you stay, and you know so much about the US, which is amazing. So how, for you, how do you stay connected to the news and be able to filter through all the noise that isn't relevant? Is it certain, you know, news outlets that you're following? Is it people on certain social media? What sort of your...
First of all, we have Stephanie Mayberry. She's our VP North America. She's in the cybersecurity domain for lots of time, and she's very much connected to the scene, mainly in the critical infrastructure and oil and gas and industrial sectors, but also to others. So she's a very good source for me. You know, whenever something happens, she sent it right there, because she knew that she knows that we will do something with it. And that's what happens also with the municipality. So once you get, you know, like one case, and then you kind of search for like additional cases, and you understand that there is some kind of a trend. This is one way. When I had the content writer person in my team, so definitely it was his job to follow in some industries that, you know, each time we said, okay, this quarter we're going to focus on this and this industries. So of course part of his job was to kind of follow the industry trend and the sector trends, and to understand what's going on there, and to see what kind of resources we can approach, or, you know, external side, and see how we can contribute content. It was something that we did before more, like to contribute professional articles about cybersecurity, about specific segments. But now, as I have less resources, it's something that we do a little bit less. This is, for example, something that is part of how to balance between the resources that you have and the need of the company to prioritize the task. And according to that, that's what we do.
That makes so much sense. I just love how you're able to find these opportunities. I think one of the challenges, people tend to find these opportunities happening, like, you know, with the municipalities getting hacked, and then jumping on that in a way that feels very fear-based. So what was your messaging in that moment? Because I feel like that some people will see that as opportunistic, and based on everything I know of your brand, I don't think you took that approach. So what was it for you of how you're able to balance that, hey, we want to be here and help you and you need this, without making them feel like if they don't have it, then they're going to get hacked again. Shame on you, sort of messaging.
Well, I must say that, you know, when it comes to cybersecurity, it's a little bit like insurance approach. You know, you should buy the insurance because you don't want to, you know, that what if your house will be hacked? What if a thief is going to come here and so on? So there is a lot of frightening in cybersecurity for sure, because nobody wants to be hacked. Nobody wants to that his organization will get a ransomware attack or something like that. I think, so the messaging was definitely, you know, there are. Hearing about all those news around, are you really protected? But we are coming more with the approach that that you can prevent the next cyber attack. So the message was how to prevent the next cyber attack, because the technology that that Audix is focused in is to prevent prevent attacks that are more like in file-based attacks. But that's the message, how to prevent the next attack.
That feels very more proactive. I think you're and insurance does this too. And I love how you refer to them, because it is this lovely balancing act that sort of needs to happen of get yourself protected but in a proactive way, and we're here to help. And so, mm-hmm. Yes, I love, it reminds me of the commercial. We had a commercial here many years ago. I don't know if it's still running, where, Geico. They had a guy called Mayhem, and he would just be like doing all sorts of things that you really don't want people to do to your home. And so, but they made it hilarious at the same time. And so again, it was a little bit fear-based, but it was also really funny. And I think they did a really nice job of balancing that. And that's sort of what's coming to mind for me, of how you sort of balance that preventative educational piece that you do so nicely through most of your mess, you know, through all your messaging that we've talked about. My last question to you on this, Rital, is in coming back to brand and talking about lead gen and the balancing act of that, have you seen, it sounds like your brand campaigns are more sporadic based off of what's happening, whether that's a month you want to focus on or something that happened in the industry. Is that the case? Is brand always on for you, or is it more sporadic based off of the campaigns you have that you're focusing on?
I think that now is a little bit more, I would say, it's not sporadic. It's sporadic when there are opportunities that we think that we can leverage them in investing not a lot of resources. And in terms of planning, yeah, I mean, we know when International Day is going to come, and we know that there is end of year and stuff like that. So we do plan according to them and try to do it in a more engaging way, and so on. So to increase the brand awareness, I think the brand awareness is always there. And in terms of sporadic things, and we're trying to leverage the momentum for some stuff that are popping up.
Because my question about this, and what I'm curious about, maybe, you know, we follow up and hang out and talk more about it, because I can't help myself, is what impact you see when you put something more brand awareness out into the world? What impact you see on your lead gen? I don't know if there's an easy way to correlate that, whether it's just impression boost from SEO, or maybe you all of a sudden have more leads. I don't know how you specifically are quantifying that, but it just makes me curious around all these amazing campaigns and beyond the impression, like what's been the business impact for you, and have you been able to measure that?
So purely awareness stuff, we do see the traffic and the engagement around this particular campaigns, and definitely you see a dramatic increase in the impressions and the engagement and so on with the lead gen. So there are campaigns for lead gen. When I mentioned the, for example, the municipality, so I cannot really measure the number of readers that read our external article, but I do see if there are referrals from this external article that was published about municipality that came to our website. This is something that we can measure, but I don't think it's really accurate because I think that there are, you know, there are many stuff that you do in a campaign, and although that you know, basically or theoretically you can measure every lead that arrived, but I think that it's a combination of everything that really boost and increase it and impact at the end of the day the total number of leads that you will get. So every little piece has its contribution. I mean, you do the external media publication, you do post in social, you target specific people in the industry with an email campaign. You do all that and you will reach the goal. This is my
amazing. Yes. I mean, I think that's what's so hard about brand is it's why people don't do it is because they don't feel like it's quantifiable. But to your point, it all contributes. It all contributes. Yes.
Definitely.
Paul, this was amazing. I'm so grateful for this conversation. Last question for you around, because you're more than a marketer, and it's so nice to get to know people outside of the industry. So I have one question for you in regards to, I have three I normally ask. I'm going to ask one. I'm trying to think about which one fits you. I'm going to go with travel. Now that you mentioned the world opening up again, you mentioned conferences becoming a thing again. For you personally, are you traveling more? Do you have some plans of where you're headed, or maybe you've traveled recently to somewhere that's been on your bucket list? What?
First of all, I would say that I prefer to travel for leisure and not for business. This is something that I prefer, especially because I was traveling a lot as a sales director. In the past, when I was working in sales and business development, let's say that for 12 years, I was always carrying a suitcase, something like that.
Oh my
and
gosh.
It wasn't easy. So thanks God for COVID that gave us a little bit of balance, and we understand that there are many things that we can do remotely, and you know, with the technology that facilitates that. So I think it's way more easy. To be honest, of course, that once we will have more conferences that we will be part of, I'll definitely travel. Although I prefer to travel, as I said, just for fun and not for work, but it's something that is part of the job, and we need to do that as well.
Do you have any personal travel plans? Are you headed anywhere soon for fun?
For fun, yeah. So as I told you, like 2 weeks ago, I was with my daughter for a weekend in Budapest, and actually at the end of next week I'm traveling to off-roading in Turkey.
Oh, cool.
For
so
10
fun.
days. It's Passover for us, so it's a good period to travel, but this is without the kids, it's with my spouse.
Oh, there you go. Yes, that sounds amazing, Rasal. I hope you have the best time. Thank you again for joining me. It was so lovely to have you, and I'm so grateful for this conversation.
Thank you very much, Carrie.
That was my conversation with Rivasol LaFrand. If you would like to learn more and see the stories in action, please head over to her LinkedIn. She has tagged all of her episodes, and you'll be able to watch them one after the other in terms of the campaigns, the brand campaigns that she's been able to build for Odex. Oh, they're so good. They're so good. The creativity, the humanness of it all. Yes. Yes to all of it. Thank you so much, Rivasol, for sharing. I'm so grateful. So grateful. Be sure to connect. We got about four more episodes here, and then we're going to head into our live series. I'm excited to see you over there, but I'm always so grateful you hang out with me here. So thank you for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please like, subscribe, and share. This episode was brought to you by MKG Marketing, the digital marketing agency that scales brands through meaningful relationships, fueling their ability to push their mission forward. It's hosted by me, Carrie Gard, CEO and co-founder of MKG Marketing. Music mixed and mastering done by Austin Ellison. If you'd like to be a guest, please visit mkgmarketing.com to apply.